Hi, and welcome back to the University of Laws podcast. I am your host, Rick Palmer. I have got a great one for you today. We are doing a little series on human rights and trying to get the whole spectrum of what human rights are and give you a lot of different tastes of that. This one is brilliant. It's with one of our tutors, Angela, and she is going to talk to you about her studies and her research into Black women in the UK justice system. It is definitely one not to be missed. Here we go.
Hi, my name is Angela Charles. So just a bit of information about me. So I started my bachelor's doing history and criminology at the University of Essex. And I really enjoyed learning about criminology and the different topics within that. Although I liked history, I had more of a draw towards sort of criminology and looking at why people commit crimes and the different theories. So from there, I moved on to doing my master's in criminology and criminal justice at the University of Oxford. And there I sort of looked at more of a focus on different areas. And I particularly sort of quite passionate and engaged on one particular module, which was race and gender. And it was from there that I decided to do my master's on women's experience in the criminal justice system. And that was sort of where my passion was at that point. It was during my dissertation for my master's that I realised there wasn't actually a lot of information on Black women's experiences in the criminal justice system. I'd sort of found a couple of books, and because of that, my supervisor at the time actually told me that I wouldn't be able to do my whole thesis on that. So that's how I then led into what I'm doing for my PhD now, which is Black women's experiences in UK prisons. And it's looking at a sort of intersectional lens, so looking at class, gender and race and how that all links together, intertwines and makes the experiences of Black women in UK prisons quite unique. So that's my sort of educational background. In terms of the work that I've done, I've worked in a couple of different areas within the criminal justice system. The first one being sort of secure training centres, and these are for young males and females aged between as young as 10 up to around 18. And I worked there working on sort of offender behaviour issues and just working one-to-one with some of the young individuals in those institutions. From there, I then worked in probation. For the National Probation Service, again working one-to-one with offenders, looking at their offending behaviour and trying to come up with programmes and targets and goals for these individuals in order to reduce their risk of reoffending. And I found that quite rewarding but also challenging. And I've also worked in youth justice for a short period of time as well, doing a similar thing to that of probation. And that's now led me to where I am now, which is a PhD candidate at the moment, but also a criminology lecturer and tutor at the University of Law.
That's an incredible journey you've got there. And I think a lot of people listening to this will be really interested, because a big passion I know of a lot of people with human rights is to do with the criminal justice system. And it's interesting to see that actually, like you were saying, there's the lack of research on certain people within it. It's actually quite worrying sometimes, a bit startling. Our event obviously is about human rights. So just as the generic term, what does human rights actually mean to you?
I think human rights to me is sort of just those basic needs that we take for granted, you know, things that we would expect within our own lives, and then looking and actually realizing that there's a lot of individuals or groups within society that don't have those basic human rights, whether it's you know, shelter, protection, and sort of those areas. So human rights really to me is those essential needs that we shouldn't even have to be sort of fighting for it, but yet we find ourselves in this position that we need to sort of push for that for other individuals.
So your section in our event, your mini lecture is titled Black Women and the UK Justice System. Could you give me like a little summary of what this is about and where your passion comes from as well?
Yeah, sure. So my sort of a mini talk so to speak, is on Black women in sort of the criminal justice system, with a focus more on prisons, which is where I've conducted research. And it's looking at some of the issues that Black women faced within the prison. So looking at staff relationships, also access to education and jobs within the prison, issues of sort of resettlement and going back into the community, looking at also ways that, these individuals try to still keep their sense of identity, so their identity as a mother or their identity as a Black woman, and how they sort of struggled with that within the prison environment that kind of strips away your identity, and looking at the ways in which the prison tried to facilitate this, but then also the ways in which the prison failed to do this. And it's really interesting topic and an area where I really got to grips with how these Black women felt and the perceived sort of discrimination and disadvantage that they felt within the criminal justice system. And it's sort of a passion of mine, again, because there wasn't enough research on it, yet Black women do make up quite a large proportion of females in UK prisons. So that's sort of where my passion is. And as a Black female myself, I think it's really important that, you know, these groups of individuals are no longer sort of rendered invisible, and that we're opening that platform for them to be able to voice their life and their lived experiences, basically.
It's very interesting that you said that, because obviously a lot of is happening at the moment with the Black Lives Matter movement, and hopefully that will continue to go on for a long, long time. And it's challenging for a lot of people in the UK to kind of understand what our place is with that and how we apply it, because we see such injustice in the US where we're not quite seeing it to the same levels of what people over there are having, but we have huge issues over here. And I can't remember an event I was on recently, I can't remember the stat that I found, but the proportion of Black women compared to white women arrest rate was just completely unrealistic. What do you think the motivation is behind that? Do you have any, like, what does your research show you kind of shows the motivation why it's just still happening?
Yeah, that's an interesting point, and it's one that sort of is still quite contentious, and people have conflicting ideas about what the reasons are towards that. So, you know, some researchers looked into this idea of sort of police bias and, you know, that level of institutional discrimination. So is it that Black women, Black males in as well, are they being stopped and are they sort of being policed more than other groups? And is that why we're getting this then disproportionate number within the criminal justice system, because more Black women are actually being arrested and sort of like sought out by the police? So there's that area, that sort of argument. But then there's also other arguments that maybe it's their sort of lived experience and their issues that they've got within society that's led them to that. So, you know, poor schooling, you know, poor housing, that lack of ability to get, you know, adequate housing, that not, you know, not being able to get the right types of jobs, which has all led to experiences that they have either found themselves in or just had to grow up within that sort of environment, and how that then has a link to crime. So there's sort of different areas, but there's not been one sort of distinctive, you know, that's definitely the reason. So it's definitely still a contentious issue.
I think another thing that's interesting about the prison system is that people often have a feeling of, well, whatever, they're guilty, so they're getting what, you know, they're getting their punishment. But with that, sometimes we make that foolish mistake of that everyone in prison's a serial killer, and people are obviously serving time for much lesser crimes, which are almost understandable with the way that certain people in certain communities are marginalized. What is your feelings on alternatives, and have you got any that you have preference to, alternative forms of punishment and rehabilitation?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting point. So I have quite a strong view in this sort of area, because when we're looking at women and women in prison, a lot of the time it's their first offence, and you think, okay, so why for their first offence are they receiving this length of prison sentence, and why are they in prison? And then we look at some of the types of offences as well, and these are non-violent offences. So if we're looking at prison being a tool to sort of remove people from society that pose a risk and, you know, that safety issue to members of the public, then these individuals shouldn't be in the prison. We then need to look at the length of time that these individuals are in prison for as well. Some of them are in prison for less than a year, sometimes 6 months, really short periods of time. And even though it's such a small period of time, it has a knock-on effect when they then leave the prison, because they may have lost, you know, whatever council housing that they had because they haven't been able to keep up with the rent. Or if you're in a certain amount of time within the prison, then they lose that, they lose their housing. We also need to look at the fact that women are the primary carers of children, and the impact that that has on those young people that have to either go and live with someone else, and it sort of uproots them and has a really negative effect on them. That's sort of a really big problem. And there's been sort of a couple of different reviews that have looked at, you know, alternatives. The Causton report in particular looked at what we should be doing for women instead. And we need to look more at rehabilitation options. So if someone's struggling with drug addiction, then we need to not put them in prison, but look at you know, treatments that are available. Also, I think an important part of it is getting women onto programs where they learn about healthy relationships, and they learn about sort of life skills that they need, whether that's employment, you know, budgeting, all of these different things. I think working in the community with a probation officer, if necessary, is a better option than, you know, going into prison for a crime that's sort of non-violent. So yeah, there definitely should be alternatives to prison, especially when women are concerned, for those reasons, really.
I really believe in alternatives to rehabilitation, and it's something I'm passionate about. It's a good point I've never thought of, is the drop-down effect, especially when you've got, with women being primary caregivers, it's huge issue, and it's sometimes, like you say, it's circumstance, but it's also definitely not a child's fault. And if an alternative type of punishment exists, because there's still one that is obviously required for a crime committed, but why would you not use the alternative that will support the community in the future? Something that we've heard obviously a lot, injustice within the system over in the US, these harsher punishments from people from minority backgrounds, and stop and search, you're so much more likely to if you're from certain racial demographic. Had a horrible situation many years ago with Stephen Lawrence, but it did bring out the McPherson report and a lot of the things that helped to make some positive changes within the police force. What are we finding though? Are we still finding there are stats that skew towards people from ethnic minority backgrounds receiving harsher punishments than people from Caucasian backgrounds?
Yeah, so unfortunately, that still is the case. And although there has been measures that have been put in place, as you said, with the McPherson recommendations, there still is that disparity. So the fact that ethnic minorities, so Black men or Black females, you know, have that distrust already of the criminal justice system and these police officers. So, you know, as soon as that individual is arrested, they're unlikely to then plead guilty. And then if they're then convicted, they won't get that plea bargain that maybe another individual would have taken. So their sentence is automatically sometimes a third longer. And that has a knock-on effect. And that is because of sort of the issues that they face within the criminal justice system and their perception of criminal justice actors. So that's sort of one area. And also that distrust also leads them to wanting to go to the Crown Court rather than the Magistrates Court, which again means that if they're found guilty, you know, they're going to have a longer sentence. And then just in general, we're still seeing really high rates of stop and search for ethnic minorities, and that's not reducing. And there's not enough, you know, we're not looking into the reasons why enough, and, you know, whether these powers need to be reined in a little bit and really holding individuals accountable as to, okay, why has this person been stopped and searched? Because if we look at the statistics again, there's quite a high acquittal rate, which shows that, you know, they've been stopped and searched and maybe cautioned or arrested, or it hasn't even got that far and there's not enough evidence, so it's then been acquitted. So we need to look at issues like that to try and stop this disparity, and try and reduce these numbers, I think.
Just thinking about who's probably listening, there's going to be a lot of people that are maybe at college age and thinking of looking at university. What can we do right now? Well, wait, I'm not that age, but I wish I was. But what can people at that in that group maybe do to start helping out? Because I think we see so much of it on social media, and we often think, well, where do we fit in? What can we do to help raise awareness or help stop this?
Yeah, so I think one of the, you know, big positives about social media is the platform that it has, and that it can get across to loads of individuals, you know, in a really short space of time, which wasn't really happening a couple of decades ago. So I think it's using those social media platforms as a way to try and highlight this injustice and push for, you know, equality. It's also about using social media platforms, if you see something you don't agree with, to maybe just challenging that person, not completely, you know, shutting them down and being aggressive, but challenging their viewpoint and trying to get them to really think about why they believe a certain way. And it's sometimes, not always, but sometimes when you have those conversations with people, it can make them stop and think and reassess their viewpoint a little bit. The other thing that I would say is petitions as well. So there's constantly, you know, petitions. You can even create your own ones on change.org, write into the government as well, your local MP. There's loads of different things that you can do and be part of different activism groups. It's sort of just making sure you're doing something. I think that will really go a long way.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us. Is there any last words of advice you might have?
I think my only advice would be to just don't doubt your ability and just go for what you want. I mean, it took me a couple of years to even decide to just do an undergraduate degree. I wasn't sure that university was for me. I wasn't sure how well I'd do when I went to university. And it is a big step, but I'm so glad that I've done it. And now looking at where I am now and that I'm doing PhD, I would have never thought I would have done that, but hopefully my research and what I'm doing is gonna, you know, bring about a little bit of change, or at least make people more aware. And that's something that I think anyone has the, you know, possibility to do. So yeah, just to sort of strive for what your goals and aspirations, and hopefully you'll get there.
Well, hopefully you've really enjoyed that conversation we had there with Angela. She had some really great, insightful things to share with us. Something I know a lot of you are thinking about at the moment is, how do I maybe develop my knowledge in certain areas that I have a passion in and represent them effectively in, say, a personal statement or in conversation and networking? And two things that I would pull out of this that you can further develop your knowledge about and will show a little bit of professional research are the two reports that were mentioned. So a lot long ago was the McPherson report, which is very influential in the tackling racism within the police force, following on from a very significant case concerning Stephen Lawrence. And also there was a report mentioned by Angela there that was the Causton report. So these are two things that you could develop your knowledge in, do a little bit of research and try and have an effective critical opinion on. And maybe that's going to give you something that you can start to develop an interest in and start to write really effectively about within your personal statement. So I hope that's been useful. Keep in touch with us. Make sure to attend our events. There's lots happening. It's a tricky time. You're going to have to try and show some experience somehow. So we've built all these events and these resources for you to try and help you with that. So go onto our website, lord.ac.uk, check out our resources page, check out our events, and make sure to listen to our podcast.